We're going to be beginning our media availability shortly. So just as a reminder, if you do have a question for any of our drivers post-race, please raise your hand in the participants queue and we'll get you called upon. We are now joined by Kyle Busch, driver of the number 18 M&M's Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. Kyle, walk us through that all-star race from your perspective.
I mean, it was all right, I guess. Certainly wish we had some more speed and some more agility in our M&M's Toyota to be able to get ourselves further up front, closer to the front. And we're making some time, making some spots there a little bit, coming to that last 15-lap run. And I think if I could have got Brad and then, maybe restarted where Brad did on the inside lane, I don't know, maybe things would have been a little bit differently. I wouldn't have had to pass Brad and the 12. And I don't know, I had plenty of time to get there. So what am I joking? I don't know. That's about all we had. You know, it just feels like I'm running real hard, trying real hard, and doing all I can with the four tires underneath me.
Okay, well, we're going to open the floor up for questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand in the participants queue. We're going to start with Bob Pockris. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Kyle, with a short race like that and only 20 cars, was it lack of traffic that kind of made it difficult to catch the leader, or should they just not have traction compound for a race like that where, you know, the top groove's never going to come in?
Yes and no. I mean, I think we could have done without the traction compound and just left it the way it was before getting here and just seeing what happened. You know, I don't know that we've run here without the traction compound in the last little bit. And this is the lower downforce package, so you tend to slide around a little bit more, so you're going to search for that grip. So guys would venture up to the top, but if the top then becomes the top groove, then what do you do? Then how do you pass? That's why we put the stuff down on the bottom, was to try to get that old-fashioned bump and run. But you got to catch a guy to be able to bump a guy. So when there's no catching him, there's no bumping him. So I don't know what the rest of the space looked like behind me as far as how well or how separated the rest of the field was. But it seemed like once we got strung out, it was just strung out.
Thank you.
I'll go next. I think he was calling me on me anyway. It's Jeff Gluck, Kyle. We haven't got a chance to talk to you too much recently about your season. This race seemed, you know, somewhat reflective of that, where you're just trying so hard and you can't quite get there. What's your mentality been like lately, fighting through all this and trying to get speed that, you know, you're not used to the performance you're having?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we're struggling right now. There's just no speed in our race cars for some reason. I don't know what's going on. It just, you got to drive 10. It seemed like tonight, even when we were mired in 10th, I was driving 110%, giving it everything I had just to maintain where the hell I was, you know, and that's not going forward. That's normally not indicative of us, Joe Gibbs Racing, Toyota, or whatever, you know. So it's certainly been frustrating this year. And it seems like anytime I fall into a rhythm and I just back up myself just a little bit to 90-95%, I'm going backwards. You know, I'm getting past and I'm getting slowing down. And, so it's just you can't run at 100% all the time, every lap. When you do, you start making mistakes. And so, we've just been run into a lot this year too. When we've had nothing happening, we just get run into. And then those are bad finishes as well. So I don't know. We can chalk it up to a whole bunch of things. But, lack of a better term is we got to be faster.
Thanks.
Next, we're going to go to Jordan Bianchi with The Athletic. Jordan, are you there?
Kyle? This race, first time ever on a short track, would you like to see it continue to be at a short track or on a rotating basis, or do you want to see it go back to Charlotte?
It don't matter to me. It can rotate. That's fine. Charlotte's close to home, but it hasn't put on the most dramatic and best finishes out there lately. Unfortunately for Bristol with tonight, it didn't seem to produce all that much excitement either. So my bad. We'll have to find something else that will, I guess. Keep going.
Next, we're going to go to Daniel McFadden.
Kyle, what are you What was your reaction to how the choose rule worked tonight? Do you think, how did it work out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was okay. It was kind of interesting how it played out, how a few guys took to it, what it did. You know, it seemed like a lot of times guys were restarting kind of in their positions, you know, maybe one off here or there, but not a whole lot different. There was a time where I think there was like four or five guys that chose the outside, and there was one guy on the inside. So I went ahead and took that inside spot, and I think I netted out back even again, you know. So the inside here tonight, for whatever reason, even though the inside's the preferred groove once you get going, it's such a detriment when you fire off. I don't know why. It's just weird. But, you know, it was – I thought it worked. I thought it worked well, went well, and maybe we'll see it happen more.
Next, we're going to go to Mark Darrow with PRN.
Thank you. Kyle, you spoke a moment ago with Jeff Gluck about your season and how you've been good but not quite good enough. Have you had this kind of season before, this kind of feeling before, like you spent the whole year just kind of one step behind, or at least most of the season one step behind?
Yeah, 2014 was really close to this. We struggled super bad when we came out with this new body style, the Gen 6 body style. So we were pretty bad as a company at JGR that year. We only won one non-restrictor plate race, and that was myself at California. The rest of us didn't win at all. So that was for sure a frustrating season. And unfortunately, I don't have a win yet, but it feels just like that year. And, man, I don't know what's going on, where it's at or whatever. But, you know, we do have 6 second-place finishes, I think, 4, 5, 6, whatever the hell it is. And we've been close a couple times, but then many of the other races we're just getting run into. You know, we have had flat tires and had gone 2 laps down and tried to do the right thing and drive it back to pit road and not cause a caution. And then it penalizes us in the day. So now I understand why those guys do that. You know, but other than that, just, you know, you get run into by a guy that shouldn't even be pitting on the same pit lap as you, I think, at Talladega. I mean, I can keep going, but no point in that. Just, we got to fight harder and do better. And that's all there is to it.
How did you come out of it in 2014? Do you feel like you made it out by the end of the year? Did it roll into 2015 before you really started to see the benefits of working so hard during the struggle?
So when we fired off the 15 season, I was injured. So I was watching from home and I was seeing that we were still kind of slow, you know, the 11, the 19, the 20, they weren't quite there yet. And then Martinsville, they all ran really good. And then when I came back Charlotte time a few weeks later, it started to kind of click and everybody started to go in the right direction. And then we won 4 or 5 times. And then it seemed like Matt won a couple, Denny won a couple, and Carl won a couple. It started to go then, you know. So it took us a good year and a half in order to get back up to the top of the circle. And I don't know if that's what we're on right now. I certainly hope not. But it's definitely frustrating. Trust me, it's not very fun where we're at. And, you know, I know everybody's kicking themselves and trying to do all they can to work harder and be smarter.
Thank you.
And we'll wrap up with Kyle with Jacob Seelman.
Kyle, you were talking a minute ago about this race ended up lacking the dramatics that I think a lot of people were hoping for. Was it a case of your car just lacking a little bit at the end, or was it, you know, hard to pass in a similar way as we've seen in years past with the All-Star race at Charlotte?
Yeah, no, it was difficult to pass for me, for my car. I had trouble being back in 10th. I had a hard time being able to make moves and pass guys. You know, once that outside lane kind of worked a little bit, then I got a little bit better at being able to make some moves, but not great still. But, you know, I don't know what would have made it better. I was the closest to the 9. It didn't seem like anybody else was going to get any closer than I was. So it was left up to me to try to put on a race and get there and make it a battle there towards the end. But I just didn't have enough. I couldn't get there.
Thank you.
All right, Kyle, thanks for joining us tonight. Good luck this weekend. All right, we are now joined by Kevin Harvick. Before we get into asking questions, Kevin, why don't you just take us quickly through your run there in the All-Star race?
Yeah, it was okay. We were on all sides of the handling, and you know, just never really got that right. Had a good you know, good strategy there at the end. Just took a couple laps too long to get past, you know, some of the cars that we needed to pass. Just needed a couple more laps to catch the leaders. But you know, just weren't going to beat the nine, you know, heads up where we were running third or fourth or whatever it was without doing something different. And a bunch of them didn't do anything but stay out and wound up having to pass a couple more than we needed to. But, you know, other than that, our Bushlight Apple Ford was okay. And just, came up a little short.
All right. We're going to go to questions now. We'll start with Jeff Gluck.
Sorry, I didn't have a question.
Okay, next we'll go to Mark Garrow.
Thank you. Kevin, what did you think of the whole night, having the fans back and the energy that seemed to bring to the race? Did it feel different? What did you think of the night?
Yeah, you know, I thought, you know, having the fans back is obviously what we all want, and having that energy back in the stands was definitely fun to hear, you know, and fun to be a part of. So, wish that we would have had a couple more lanes to race in. I think if the only thing I would like to see different, you know, if we did that, if we raced here again, was, you know, run all the other races so that the track was, you know, 100% run in so you could run all over the racetrack. But it definitely was nice to have some energy back in the racetrack.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Jordan Bianchi.
Kind of a follow-up to that, Kevin. Excuse me. Would you like to see the All-Star race continue here at Bristol? And did this race tonight fulfill expectations, do you think?
You know, I'd like to see it moved around. I don't think it should stay in one spot. You know, I think, you know, we could definitely, you know, have the track prepared better. You know, if we did race here again, you know, they didn't even clean the outside lane one time. So never really had a chance to even get high enough to, you know, to get that lane to come in. You know, the second lane came in, a couple cars made a little bit of ground, but, you know, the bottom was just so dominant that, you know, you had to run most of your laps down there.
Next, we're going to go to Daniel McFadden.
So how do you think the choose rule played out tonight? Did it affect the racing at all on the restarts for you?
Well, you know, I think that the thing that it does is just takes all the question out of, you know, where everybody is and who's where. And, you know, when you get to that line, everybody's already made their choice, and there's no funny business of, you know, people trying to start in a different lane or do something that they didn't choose to do. So I think that went really well. And you know, for the most part, I don't think there was any issues.
Next, we're going to go to Chris Knight.
Hey, Kevin, the All-Star race was 46 minutes and 19 seconds and only 140 laps. Do you think it was too short in order to create what it was the All-Star race was intended to?
Yeah, I don't know that I'm the right guy to ask that. You know, I think I think a short race, and you look at last week, you know, for the most part, it wasn't a very good race and, you know, you had a great finish. So, you know, I think it all depends on, you know, how all that goes, and you know, I think tonight Chase Elliott winning makes it a better race, just because, you know, he's obviously, you know, the most popular guy here, and you know, it's good for all of us when Chase wins. So, you know, I think when you look at that, it's I don't know that the time really matters. I think it's like I said earlier, I think the track could have been prepared and taken care of differently than it was tonight to allow, you know, for that top lane to come around.
Kevin.
Next, we're going to go to Zach Sterniolo.
Kevin, you've been consistent on Chase needing to win more regularly in the past. And for him to win this All-Star race tonight in front of the fans, what do you feel like that does for the momentum of I don't know if it does anything for the momentum of the sport, but just to have that kind of moment with the fans back here.
You know, obviously, like I just said, you know, I think when Chase wins, it's good for all of us. So, you know, obviously, you know, that's a good thing.
And to follow up, obviously, the other new thing tonight was the underglow. Did that have any effect on, or was it weird seeing that in the cars in front of you?
I wish mine would have fallen off. the only person that I talked to that thought that underglow light was good was my 8-year-old. So, you know, if that, hopefully the kids liked it, because that was definitely something that is, I'm way out of that age group for for the I guess you call it the underglow light.
Thanks.
Next, we'll go to Dustin Long.
Thank you. Kevin, you talked about the track prep tonight. I think there were some questions in regards to track prep last week at Kentucky. Is there a concern with what's happened here this past week, and is there a worry going into Texas this weekend where track prep certainly can play an important role in that event?
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely dependent on, you know, the guys taking care of the racetrack. And you know, I think when we definitely went to Charlotte and the track prep was didn't seem, you know, like the PJ one was, you know, what it had been the last couple of years. It seemed like, you know, when we started at Kentucky, you know, the track prep obviously wasn't very good for the Xfinity cars, dust flying everywhere. And, you know, the top was just nasty, dirty tonight and really no chance to ever even run up there. So, yeah, I mean, the track prep piece of it, you know, just, you know, last week we showed up on race day and, you know, the PJ one was put on the racetrack, you know, without anybody knowing. So definitely, yeah, I think you have to be concerned with it going to Texas because it just hasn't been, you know, the same as what it was last year.
And what's the lesson of this week, or what to avoid what's happened maybe tonight and last week at Kentucky, what needs to be done to avoid that this weekend at Texas?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think, you know, the one thing that lacks there is practice. So I think everybody's kind of guessing at what's right and what's wrong. But the track was definitely not ready to race last week at Kentucky when those guys took off in the Xfinity race. You know, and tonight there was no chance that the top group was going to come in. I mean, there was enough stuff up there that you, if you drove up there, it was going to take you two or three laps to get clean back up. So, you know, it just wound up not being able to push it high enough. You know, we still had a second group, but, you know, I think a lot of people had the expectations that the bump and run was going to come into play tonight. But, you know, when the bottom has that much grip, you know, then it becomes, you know, kind of an aero game, which it came, you know, kind of became tonight.
Thank you.
Yep. We have time for one more quick question from Jacob Seelman.
Kevin, you kind of alluded to it, and I'll follow up on what Dustin just asked. Yeah, I know everybody was really hoping that this race move into a short track was going to give that dramatic, that, you know, game seven type of a moment. We didn't see that. Was the track prep, you feel like, and the lack of that outside lane, was that the deciding factor?
Well, you didn't have any options, you know, to move around and, you know, make your car do different things. And, you know, a lot of times if you can't run the bottom, you move up to the top and, you know, it seems like the cars have a better chance to fix the problems that they had. And, you know, with the short race tonight, you know, not having an option besides the bottom, you just kind of took all those things away of tools that you had to try to race, you know, and make your car faster. And tonight the 9 hit it and, you know, he had the dominant car in the lane that we had available.
Awesome. Well, Kevin, thanks for joining us tonight and good luck this coming weekend at Texas.
Thanks.
All right. We are now joined by our race winner, Chase Elliott. Chase, before we go to questions, why don't you just start off by running through your all-star race win there for us?
Yeah, just a, you know, a super special night, a special event. You know, any race is hard to win, but this is a special race to win. Something that locks you in the all-star race for life, and that's extremely special to join Dad and winning this race. Means a lot to me as well. Just a big thanks to all our partners, UniFirst, Napa Hooters, Kelley Blue Book, Mountain Dew, Chevrolet. All our partners that make this go around, they've stood by us through some, you know, some not so spectacular years. So we've had a rough couple weeks, and we ruined Mr. Hendrick's birthday on Sunday by running pathetic. So it was really nice to slightly make up for that tonight.
Awesome. We're going to go to questions. We'll start with Bob Pockris.
Yeah, Chase, you had a really good car back in May at Bristol. Was the car just as good tonight? Was it better? How would you kind of rate it?
To be honest, I think it was a little bit better. I think we improved our car, at least for the short run. You know, the spring or the race a few weeks ago, I felt like consisted of more long runs than it did short runs, but the short run came down to the very end, and I felt like that was our weak point in that event. So we put a lot of emphasis in trying to be better on the short run. And I think that I thought we hit it really well tonight.
And on those, in that last segment, are you kind of looking in your mirror and saying, when am I going to get bumped? When am I going to, when's somebody going to try to wreck me for this thing?
Yeah, I mean, for, you don't, I think you have to expect that, you know, in any event, you know, especially this one, though, there's no points on the line or anything. But, you know, the goal is to get far enough away where they don't have that option. So it luckily it worked out that way tonight and got a good restart there at the end and was able to put together a good 15 laps to seal the deal.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Mark Garrow.
Congratulations, Chase, on the win. You just alluded to a moment ago this being a big win. Just how big is it to you, and why is it so big to you?
Well, I mean, this is, you know, to me, this is one of those prestigious events that the Cup Series only has, right? I mean, this is a special race on the schedule every year. There's a lot of hype around it. And the other thing about it is, you know, it's something you have to race your way into. And luckily we raced our way into this deal for life now. So, you know, that means a lot. You know, to me, it reminds me a lot of, you know, the Clash or something at the beginning of the year in some ways, but I think this race is bigger than that because you're racing against the very best of over recent times and in anybody's career, you know, that have locked themselves into this event. So, you know, to beat the best, I think is always special.
And this race, the only other time it was run away from Charlotte was Atlanta. Your dad won it, and now the second time it's left Charlotte. So what does it mean to have a victory in this race just like your dad?
Yeah, you know, I didn't know that until I knew that, but I didn't really put it together until Winston told me that there on the front straightaway. So that's super cool, you know, to join. And then somebody told me upstairs a second ago that I think the only other family duo to win the All-Star race were the Earnhardts. You know, so anytime you can join them, and anything racing is very special. So to join Dad and winning this event, heck, I mean that's not just special. I mean that's a lot, you know, a lot of years and a lot of history for everything to come full circle like that. It's pretty dang cool.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Dustin Long.
Yeah, Chase. Kevin Harvick was talking about the challenges of the upper lane and just kind of how dirty it was, and kind of raised the question about track prep. And I also know there was, I guess, some concern about track prep at Kentucky last week from some. How concerned has it been, the track prep, the last two races, and is there a concern going into Texas where that can be a factor as well?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, the track prep was no different today than it has been the past two or three years we've been coming here. The difference was the length of the event was just not long enough for us to, you know, get the grip strip up off the bottom to where the momentum around the top became the dominating factor. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, you know, by the end of a 500 lap race, the top is the place to be. And at the end of a 100 and some odd lap race, the bottom's the place to be. So, you know, there's still a place to be. So I'm not really sure that it matters.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Marty Smith.
Chase, congratulations, brother. I'm curious, you said in addressing the victory on television that there's no feeling like watching those fans lose their mind for you after you've been successful like you were tonight. What's the difference from your perspective, from the athlete's perspective, of having that adulation at the end of an historic night for you versus what you guys have experienced without anyone there? What is that?
Yeah, you know, to me, tonight felt like an event again, and I feel like we've been missing that piece for a couple months. And it just felt really good to get NASCAR back. I mean, the NASCAR is built on the fans, and you know, once the race starts, it's hard to engage with them because you can't hear them. But you know, before a race, the atmosphere was energetic again. I felt like the vibe was back, and I felt like that fire and intensity in me was back. Even more so than it has been, a piece that had been missing. And I think that's driven by the people, the cars pulling in, the you know, the pre-race parties and everything that you see And I actually went up in the stands. I snuck up there with my mask on and watched the open from the back straightaway. And, you know, I'm looking around up there and I'm seeing all these, you know, kids and families and people wearing their respective drivers and a lot of nine gear. And you just don't realize how much impact you have on people you've never met and you never will meet, who, you know, genuinely want to see me do well. And they don't even know me, you know, and it's pretty dang cool to experience that. So I felt like I had a special night sitting up there with them, watching that open from the grandstands, really seeing and getting back to the roots of what, you know, this sport's built on. And then to engage with them after the race, to me, it made it mean that much more.
Fantastic. Congratulations. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Jim Utter.
Congrats, Chase. You also said after the race that you guys had struggled some. You've had some difficult races in the last several weeks. I just wondered, did you guys feel like as a collective unit at Hendrick that you were missing something the last several weeks, or do you think it's more kind of a just individual circumstances of the races?
A little bit of both. But we, you know, I felt like I was struggling. I wasn't – you know, doing a real good job, giving good feedback. And you know, to me, good feedback is you know, giving a direction on the car and coming in and doing that and going back out and being better. And my direction has not been pointing us in a better direction and going faster these past couple weeks. So I just felt like I need to kind of hit the reset button a little bit and not overthink things and just do what I think feels right. And you know, that's a hard thing to do all the time, you know, and you try to get better and you try to learn. And a lot of times you can, you know, take yourself down a road or this or that may not necessarily be benefiting you. But we all want to improve. I certainly still have room for improvement. Tonight was a great night for us, but I still think I can do better. And there's areas that I can improve on. So I'm going to keep working on that.
And going back to Marty's question, how can you must get an adrenaline rush off of a win like this compared to the one you had without fans. I know that's not really something tangible, but it must mean something going forward that you can take forward going for the rest of the season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, to me, there is no more electric environment that we as NASCAR drivers can interact with than here at Bristol. I mean, we don't go to, there's no other racetrack that's like this, that you're surrounded by the people watching. All the way around the racetrack. So I don't think there's a better place to have people back for the first time than here. And, I know it was limited on how many people could come, but heck, it felt like, you know, they sure were making a lot of noise for there to only be 30,000 people here. So that was pretty cool.
Thank you very much.
Next, we're going to go to Jacob Smith.
You're muted. You're muted.
Jacob, we'll come back to you in a little bit. We're going to go to Davey Siegel.
Hey, Chase, what are you going to do with the money?
That's a great question. Blaney was giving me a hard time about Mountain Dew earlier today, so I think I'm just going to send a truck to his house, and they're going to unload about 14 pallets of Mountain Dew in his driveway this week and see what he does with that.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Andrew Kurland.
Yeah, Chase. Normally, we don't race mid-July at Bristol. Now, the night race is pretty close in terms of temperatures, but did you notice anything different in the car, you know, tonight racing mid-July than you would at Bristol normally during the season?
To me, it felt like normal Bristol. I mean, this racetrack, I think, is really consistent from the standpoint of just the overall feel and what it's like. So, I thought everything was really very Bristol-esque.
Thank you, Chase.
Next, we're going to go to Zach Sterniola.
Chase, congrats on this win. This being the first real marquee win of your career, you've touched already on the significance of what it means to win this event, but to have a marquee event on your resume now, what kind of importance does that mean for you?
Well, it means a lot, you know, like, you know, I think that's why the Coca-Cola 600 this year hurt so much. You know, those are those are big events, and you know, this race is a big event, the 600, the Daytona 500, the Brickyard, the Southern 500, all those races, you know, are just ones that I feel like when you get done racing and you can look back and say that you had won something like that, I think is a special thing. So that's why all wins are hard. I've never had an easy one. So I can't say that any of them are any harder or easier than others, but you know, when I get done racing one day, to look back and say that we won the All-Star race, I think will be a special thing.
The underglow on the cars, did it what did it look like from your perspective, and did it change anything for you? Was it just weird to see out there?
I didn't think it did much of anything, to be honest with you. It sure didn't do anything for me.
Thanks, Chase.
Chase, we're going to read you Jacob Smith's question from Dawson County News. Jacob said, can you hear the sirens going off in Dawsonville tonight? What does it mean to you to bring this back to Dawsonville and the fans that have followed you your whole career?
Yeah, it's amazing. I can't wait to get home. I know it's late. I don't know what time it is, but probably not going to hear it tonight. But hopefully somebody took a good video of it and I can see it. It's such a special tradition that, you know, Gordon there at the pool room has carried on for me. And, you know, after doing it for my dad's career over the years. So, just proud that we were able to win and make it, you know, make it happen.
Awesome. Next, we're going to go to Daniel McFadden.
Well, Chase, so how do you think the choose rule played out tonight? How did it affect your race or just the race in general?
Well, I think the choose rule's been needed for a long time. You know, I think it should be that way every week. You know, I don't think there's really a reason to not have it. You know, there's no reason to me why you shouldn't have the choice, or you should be, you know, automatically told where you're going to line up when one lane has an obvious advantage just based on where you come off pit road. I mean, to me, that's not, I mean, life isn't fair, I guess, but that's not, it just makes way more sense to put it in our hands and, you know, it either works out for you or you doesn't. And if it doesn't work out, then it's your own fault, not, you know, not the luck of the draw and where you come off pit road.
Next, we're going to go to Jacob Seelman.
There we go. Sorry, I was trying to toggle the unmute. Chase, you jumped out front there towards the final two stages, and pretty much once you took control of that race, never gave it up again. How important, you know, was getting out front and getting clean air? I know a lot of people were kind of hoping for that dramatic moment, but it felt a little bit like how important it is on the intermediate tracks, like when this race was at Charlotte, especially in that last stage.
Well, I mean, luckily we were able to pass up through there. You know, I think we had a really good UniFirst Camaro and we were able to make some passes there at the beginning of the race. I just think my team did a really good job of hitting the setup really well, for running the bottom. You know, I don't know how it would have been if I'd ever had to move up, but, I just think, the way it played out, you know, we were faster on the bottom and we were able to get out front and control the race. And, you know, that's nothing new. I mean, when, you know, somebody has a fast car and they get out front, you know, it typically looks like that, I feel like. So I was just glad it was us this time.
Thank you.
And we're going to wrap up with Cole Cusimano.
Hey, Chase, congrats. How much of tonight's race can you apply to the playoff race in the fall? Or was it maybe too small of a sample size to tell?
No, I mean, I think Bristol's Bristol, like I said a minute ago. So we'll for sure think about what we had here a few weeks ago, what we had tonight, and try to be better when we come back.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
Congratulations, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Have a good night.
And we're going to be joined very shortly with by the race-winning crew chief, Alan Gustafson. All right, now that Alan has slid into the picture, we are going to get started with Alan Gustafson, the race-winning crew chief for tonight's All-Star race. Alan, why don't you just start off and quickly run through the race from the top of the pit box for us there as we wait for media members to queue up questions.
Yeah, so, you know, we started 13th, so we knew we had to pass some cars pretty quickly. And Unifirst Chevy was pretty fast, so he made some pretty quick ground there. And I don't remember where we got to after the first 55, but certainly somewhere in the top three. And we knew we were going to pit there and get a read on the tires and get an adjustment on the car. So we did that. And then the next 35 went pretty well, and he was able to get past Kevin and get the lead. And that was probably the toughest decision of the night, is just, you know, when you had the lead, you don't want to give it up here. Our plan had been to pit then and get tires, but with the lead, it made it a little bit more difficult, but we stuck to our guns there and pitted. Worked out there, you know. I think Ryan was the only one who stayed out, and Brad took two, and fortunately for us, everything went smooth from there. And I think having a tire advantage on those guys certainly paid off. And you know, Kyle was getting pretty good there, where I could see him making some ground, so he certainly made a push there at the end to make it interesting. But yeah, the car was good, really happy, the pit stops were great, so just about as smooth as a night as you could ask for.
Awesome. We're now going to go to questions. Reminder, if you have a question, raise your hand in the participants tab. We're going to start with Bob Pockers.
Yeah, Alan, when you get there today and you see pretty heavy application of the PJ1 there on the bottom groove, it's a 20-car race, 140 laps. Are you thinking, yeah, this is just going to be a totally bottom feeder race?
Yeah, you know, my experience with the grooves here is you don't really run the top end until you have to start lapping traffic significantly, right? That's when you start running the top end, is when you have to lap cars and the leaders kind of get around, everybody gets strung out, and then there's, you know, have no option. And the faster cars ultimately will start running the top because they've got to get through lappers. And you know, with it being as short as it is and knowing that it's a short field and the chance of lapping cars, you know, we had planned on the bottom. Really, you know, having our car get on the bottom and having good short run speed.
And it's a little bit hard for me to tell, but it looked like maybe you had Chase turn off the underglow lights for the pit stop. If you did, what was that? So that your crew guys could see better, or was there something that you were concerned about them hitting or doing something with that light on?
That's a secret, Bob. I can't tell you that. No, I'm kidding. We hadn't done it before, so I didn't want to take a chance and have the lights. You know, we didn't get the lights until, you know, pretty late in the game, and we hadn't had experience doing it. And I don't think it'd be a problem ultimately, but certainly we weren't going to take that chance.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Next, we're going to go to Mark Garrow.
Thank you. Congratulations, Alan, on the win tonight. What does this win do for your team? You were rolling there for a while, hit a few bumps in the road. What does this do for the team moving forward?
Well, it puts $1 million in our bank account, so that's always a good thing. And certainly happy for Chevrolet and Unifirst, and you know, everybody at HMS is, you know, works really hard. And you know, a win will certainly lift everybody's spirits and give you some momentum. But yeah, we gotta, you know, I certainly wish this was a points race. We gotta get back on track, and we've had a couple races, you know, a stretch that haven't been the greatest for us. I do think we've had some pretty decent performance in our cars, and you know, the way it goes, sometimes you just don't get the finishes that you feel like you deserve, and that's certainly the case at Indianapolis and Kentucky in the first Pocono. So, yeah, we'll work hard, and this doesn't hurt. And Bristol's been a good track for us, and this was an opportunity for us to work on a few things that we struggled with in the spring to be prepared when we come back here when it really matters.
For some of the races coming up, do you feel like you've got a pretty good string of strong tracks coming up? Do you feel like this momentum can kind of play over there and really have you gain some momentum as well in the points side of it, the official point races?
Yeah, I mean, we need to, we've got some points to make up. We've slid a few spots it's pretty close from second to fourth where we're at. Yeah, to be honest with you, Texas and Loudoun aren't two of our better tracks. Those tracks we've circled to work hard on and try to improve, and I feel like we can. I think we learned some things from Kentucky we can take to Texas, so we're looking forward to putting that to use. And, you know, Loudoun's a place that we need to work on. But we've had some decent runs there, but, you know, I wouldn't say that we've got that one circled as one of our favorites. But, yeah, it's – look, man, anytime you can win, it's better. I don't know that it's going to be a huge step forward. You know, this track's so unique. I can't say that what we've done here is going to help Texas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Andrew Kurland.
Hey, Alan, congrats on the win tonight. This is more of a, you know, overall season question. After NASCAR returned, you guys only have to bring really one car to the racetrack each and every weekend. Does that change how you prepare cars in the shop, and do you have more time to focus on specific cars bringing to the racetrack?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think that if we had backup cars weekly, we could do it with the schedule we've had and the way we're working split shifts and, you know, trying to keep the road crew away from the shop crew as much as possible. And I just, man, it'd be just a monumental task to do that with backup cars. So I think it's been a must. You know, I wouldn't say that it's put us in a better position to focus on the primary cars. It's just, you know, kept that status quo or the way it was. And I don't think that us or really any of the teams could keep their head above water in this, you know, kind of COVID era and the schedule we've run with having to do two cars every weekend.
Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome.
Next, we'll go to Dustin Long.
Alan, kind of on along those lines, this is a middle of a stretch of four races in like 11 days. Certainly you guys did this earlier when the sport came back in May, but those were only at two tracks. Here it's four tracks, four different tracks, four locations. What are the challenges in this stretch for you guys and how you're getting things prepared?
Yeah, it's a tough swing for sure with you know, Wednesday night race and then a Sunday race in Texas and then back in to Kansas on Thursday. You know, that's tough, and then we've got some double headers coming down the road, so certainly have to get those cars prepared. So yeah, we're full gas and you know, it's a lot of hours and it's a lot of prep, and it's not going to be easy. And you know, it's one of those situations that you're, and I think I talked to you about this before we went back, you know, it's one of those situations where you're just trying to keep the quality up and keep the cars as good as you can, and try to find a way to improve, you know, throughout all that, which is difficult to do. So it's going to be a tough stretch, and I think that it'll be an opportunity to make some ground on some people if you get it right.
I know it's about a month away, but maybe the way this season's been, a month is, feels like probably a year away, but you guys will be racing on the Daytona road course, and you haven't done that before. I'm curious the challenges in getting ready for that, or is that simple for you guys, and it's just you just bring out your Roval-winning car and just run it there and be good with it?
Yeah, it's not simple. It's going to be difficult for everybody. You know, you're not going to have any references, really. Certainly, there are some characteristics of the Roval, but it's obviously a bigger oval, and the speeds are going to be higher. And that infield's, you know, pretty unique. And in my experience, a million years ago, road racing there, it's you know, it's a track that's hard to get a hold of. So that infield's not the easiest to navigate and to get the car hooked up on. So it's going to present some unique challenges. And then certainly the speed of the banking, and then the, you know, it's a pretty, you know, dedicated true chicane, unlike what we've run at the Roval. So that'll be different, I think, for everybody to get a hold of. And then you know, we'll have to manage the speeds too, so it'll be a very very unique experience. But I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a fun challenge. I really like that road course. I hope the cars race well there. I think they will. So I hope it goes well, obviously, for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to Zach Sterniola.
Alan, congrats on tonight's win. I'm curious the significance to you of helping Chase get his first marquee win. I know you guys were really close in the 600, but to get a marquee win here tonight, how significant is that for you and him?
You know, to win at Bristol's cool no matter when you do it. And, you know, to win the first All-Star race and, you know, pretty unique circumstances, something that we haven't done before. So anytime you can be the first at something, you know, you feel like you've done a good job. And yeah, I mean, it's very satisfying for all of us. And certainly, you know, I think Chase is the best out there. So anytime we can help give him a car like we did tonight to showcase his talent, it's very gratifying.
Thanks and congrats again.
Thank you.
And we're going to wrap up with Daniel McFadden.
Alan, I'm wondering, how did the choose rule play out from your perspective? And what kind of communication did you have with Chase on each restart about which lane to take?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we had some statistical analysis of that and the effectiveness of the lanes. And we talked about it beforehand. And I think he used that information, I think, every time but once. He kind of went against the grain. And, you know, we certainly leave that up to him. He knows you know, what the car is driving like and what the opportunities are. And, you know, I don't think it's a just absolute monumental change to the sport, but it is, you know, I've been in this situation a lot of times where it's just really frustrating when you get taken out of an opportunity to race for a win because of a lane. And, you know, there are some tracks and this is one of them that the lanes can get huge amount of disparity and it kind of sucks when you're, you know, second or third and you get stuck on the bottom and you know, you end up seventh or eighth and don't get a chance to race for the win. So I do think it gives an opportunity to make it a little bit more fair for the competitors, but I don't think it's going to be a monumental shift. You know, you're still it's probably going to affect a row or two like what you saw tonight.
Awesome. Well, Alan, thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the win and good luck this weekend in Texas.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks. All right, and to all of our media members, just a reminder that the audio and video from tonight's teleconference, as well as transcripts, will be available on NASCARmedia.com shortly. Thanks for joining us. Have a great night, and we'll see you shortly.